Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Janet Lightstone. Welcome to Women in Prophecy. That music you just heard is sort of our anthem. It's I to We by Talia Morales, and she's putting out a new CD hopefully soon, and we'll leave you up to date on that. You can always check on her website, taliamorales.com, for more on that and her amazing music. Find her on YouTube singing some songs. She's awesome. Anyway, this is Women in Prophecy, and we air the second Friday of the month interviewing wise women from around the world. We are a production of Sisters of Hinua Project. The Sisters of Hinua Project provides for traditional elders, spiritual leaders, and wise ones with venues to gift their visions and teachings through pilgrimages, events, web radio programs, and print media. Sisters of Hinua also offers financial support to our elders in need of basic necessities. Our elders carry wisdom and offer teachings of peace that heal the earth. The vision of Sisters of Hinua is to ensure our elders thrive, enabling them to pass their wisdom on to the next generation. Every month, the Sisters of Hinua Project presents this webcast to provide a forum for us to meet with our grandmothers. In Native tradition, the term grandmother refers to an honored elder who is considered a wise one, wise in earth ways, prophecy, storytelling, and healing. You can learn more about Sisters of Hinua at sistersofhinua.org. I have special news today. Yolanda Martinez, fabulous Native American musical artist and Apache singer. She was our guest in September. She has a new Latin CD, Amor de Varias, now available on her website, yolandasdrums.com. Today, though, I'm thrilled to have with us Dianic Hawaiian priestess, Leilani Farley. Welcome, Leilani.
Aloha, Janet. It's wonderful to be here.
It's so nice to hear your voice. Nice to have you here. You have amazing energy. And Leilani is part of our community in San Diego by being up north in San Francisco area. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area and is a wonderful priestess and dancer. Hawaiian dancer, yes?
Thank you, yes. I dance hula. I've been dancing hula pretty much most of my life.
Wow. And so first of all, tell me, what is a Dianic Hawaiian priestess?
Well, I think I'm actually the only Dianic Hawaiian priestess that I know. The Dianic piece is that our ceremonies are specifically for women, and we invoke and honor the sacred feminine or, you know, goddess or divine feminine. So the Dianic piece is a service towards creating sacred women's ceremonies and rites of passage. And then, of course, I am part Hawaiian. My mom was born and raised in Hawaii, and I lived there as well, and back and forth between there and the mainland, because my dad's from the mainland. Or I should say the continental United States, actually, because Hawaii is the mainland. And so the combination of my Hawaiian culture and serving women come together where, you know, I introduce people to the culture of Hawaii, the feeling of aloha and community and family and ohana, honoring the land and the aina. So taking it into a Dianic women-centered tradition, but also a very Native and indigenous energy in there as well.
What is the aina?
The aina is the land, and as Hawaiians, it's something that we very much revere our land and our islands and, you know, the people and the weather and the food and all the different things. So it's a way of, just as an all-encompassing term to mean, you know, the land, not just physically, but energetically. Yeah, so there, we often talk about aloha aina, because the aloha is the feeling of love and connection. So the aloha aina is the love of the land.
Oh,
so I like
okay.
to teach that, yes. Yeah, so bringing that forward into a deeper way, you know, just an earth-based reverence spirit connection that we are, you know, a lot of us are, if we didn't lose the connection, we're re-teaching and relearning the old ways, you know, the ways of our of nature, of our land.
Great. That's beautiful. So what was the first, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with goddess spirituality and what that's about. It's still a
yeah.
fairly new concept to a lot of people. So what was your first experience with goddess spirituality?
Well, I think my first experience was being raised in the Hawaiian culture, and you hear myths and legends about the different goddesses and deities, and of course in Hawaii, our big grandma Tutu Pele is someone that everybody's aware of Pele, and it's just something that is very innate and part of the culture. So I think my first experience is hearing about stories where, you know, the volcano is erupting and people are making offerings to the volcano. And, you know, sometimes Pele is a trickster, and she's been known to show up to people from time to time, where there's legends and stories about people crossing certain areas on certain islands and seeing an old woman who needs a ride and stopping to pick her up, and, you know, only to find halfway during the drive, when they look in the back seat, there's no one there. So I think that was my very first experience to knowing that there was an energy of, you know, woman spirit, this big form of honoring our ancestors in the female form in that way. And then I'd say from that point, you know, you kind of in some ways almost take your culture for granted and think, well, that's the way everyone is raised. And I don't think it was until I got into, you know, high school and college where I really realized, you know, wow, this isn't something that most people are growing up hearing, you know, about goddesses and myths and legends about spirits and, you know, chiefs and chiefesses, spirits of the old ancestors walking the land. And actually it took, you know, years later for me to reconnect, you know, in what's now known more as goddess spirituality and the goddess movement, where women are gathering together and learning more about, I think there's a term that is called She of 10,000 Names. So cultures throughout time and history where the goddess or female deities have been honored, and like you're saying, it is new because so many of us only think in terms of, you know, deity as he or him or God or the father, and there's this other element of spirituality that's been really missing from the culture at large. So it's, for me, it's very exciting to, you know, to bring her, you know, to bring she, to bring goddess, to bring mother reverence back to the people so that we have this choice, you know, and that if it resonates, great. If it doesn't, that's fine too, but at least that we have the understanding that this does exist and this is a spiritual path and a choice.
How do you think that mindset, you know, the honoring of the feminine how does it differ from, you know, how does it differ from a more patriarchal structure? So how did that change your view as compared to the people that grew up with the patriarchal structure that you met?
Yeah, well, I'd
like
say there's...
I mean, how did that make you
sure.
different?
I would say that being raised in a culture and feeling comfortable continuing to pursue, you know, goddess-centered spirituality, I think that the distinction that I've noticed is that there's a very female, woman-empowered strength and, you know, a female woman-centered, you know, family dynamic and community dynamic that spreads throughout, you know, your everyday life, really. So I've noticed that, I guess, you know, in other dynamics where there's an emphasis on the male or the masculine. And by emphasis, I don't even mean emphasis as in a balanced way, but there's really, like you said, the patriarchal predominant, almost a force of male and masculine energy, and God the Father being something that is above us and, you know, sort of like this ruling father. And I've noticed that, you know, a lot of people that have been raised in that, whether they, you know, wanted to, whether they wanted to sign up for that or not, you know, because sometimes you're just born into your family, and by that you're born into your spirituality, you know, and so you don't really have a choice a lot when you're a child. And, you know, that there's this, I think, an absence of the depth and the profound empowered energy that we as women have inside of us. So there's been a lack of the cultivation of that kind of presence in, I think, not just women's lives, but also in the lives of the men around us, you know, because certainly we're all influenced by, you know, both women and men, by the way that the message of what it means to be, you know, a girl or a woman or a female, you know, what that means and how that's held by the overall culture can be very influential on our own personal feelings about ourselves, you know, and our self-esteem and, you know, just the way we walk through life and carry ourselves. So just on the most basic level, it really does have, I've noticed, a significant impact, and I think that's why a lot of women are choosing, you know, and men, because there are men that are definitely, you know, goddess revering brothers, but that a lot of women are choosing, and girls for that matter, because we have an awful lot of girls and teenagers coming to our community, are much more inspired and impacted by this notion of, you know, coming into a place of spirit where we actualize our fullest potential. You know, what are our passions? How is our body sacred? You know, holding ourselves in a very reverent way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think that, you know, a lot of things that I've been reading or hearing from Spirit is that, you know, the women's way is the way of peace, really. And if you look
Definitely.
At that on a practical level, you know, and then, you know, in the real world level, the women's movement in the 60s was the most peaceful civil rights movement ever held.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
So, you know, I see that potentially goddess energy could really create peace on earth with the embrace of that.
I completely see that point. And I think that, you know, we as women have always, you know, since time began, been the protectresses of our family, of our children, you know. Humanity has really survived because of this ability for us to, you know, to do great things, you know, to what we need to feed our children, what we need to do to keep a roof over our head or whatever that is, you know. If you go back to the days where, you know, our roof was a thatched hut, you know, or a grove of trees, but we've always been the ones that have provided, you know, the sustenance that we've needed to allow humankind to continue on, you know. So I think by that nature, you know, we aren't necessarily going for being the destructors of life, because we know in order for our offspring and our families and, you know, generations to survive, that we do what we can to preserve and protect, which doesn't mean, you know, being violent and all those kind of things. So I love that you're saying the peacekeeping piece.
Yeah. So tell me, what, on a personal note, what was your most profound spiritual experience?
Well, let's see. I've had so many, so it's hard to, I mean, that's a hard question, but I would say the thing that comes to mind is my kahuna initiation, uniki ceremony on the Big Island, at the Hawk Wind ceremony that was put on by, you know, Maria and Linda Yasebru and lots of the elders from Hawaii, and the kahunas were there, and our kahuna, Happy Pahia, was there facilitating, and the whole weekend was magical, actually. So the whole weekend was based on a lot of ceremony and storytelling and community sharing and altar building and healing, and we all gathered under a 100-year-old banyan tree named Miracle, and at Auntie Calais's house, and the canopy of the tree was so huge that even when it rained, we were protected and able to sit outdoors because of this beautiful living umbrella of life, you know? Wow. So the whole weekend really pretty much happened there. And, you know, there were hawks flying overhead. And, you know, before the workshops even started and the weekend started, we went out to the volcano with the elder kahunas and asked permission of Tututele, because we always want to make sure that we ask permission of the land and the deities of the place that we honor. And I had been invited to present a piece for the weekend on sacred dance, and I shared a lot of, you know, the information about a hula, but I also shared a lot of the story of the islands of Hawaii and, you know, still our cultures, remembering that the Hawaiian Islands were illegally taken over in the late 1800s by the United States, and, you know, keeping that alive and continuing to work towards justice. And so, you know, that whole weekend was so amazing. And then without me even knowing it, the elder kahunas bestowed the privilege of being included in their kahuna family as an acknowledgement of the work that I've been doing, you know, with the goddess and the dance and the land and all the different kinds of things. So that experience just, it's still, you know, it's one of those things that it plays in my head visually. It also, I can feel it in my heart just even as I'm talking. Several of the spiritual sisters that I have from the Bay Area were there, including my own blood sister, and one of my aunties that lives on the Big Island was able to be there. So it just was this magical, you know, coming together of deity and teachers and, you know, students and, you know, Miracle the tree and everything just came together in an amazing way. So that still holds me in a huge way and continues to support and facilitate a lot of the work that I do, you know, when I'm here on my San Francisco turf doing the work of the land in Hawaii.
Wow. Yeah, being a kahuna is a very, you know, being initiated as kahuna is a very big honor. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of protocol and structure and reverence needed for that, and that's an amazing thing. So, congratulations.
Well, it felt like a high honor. It's definitely not one of those, you know, there's so much of these, you know, take a class online, sign up for a weekend workshop and become a shaman or a kahuna or, you know, a priestess or whatever you want to call it. And I'm definitely more, I guess you could say, old school, where I'm a believer that, you know, those things are, you know, certainly earned through our own self-work, but they're really also bestowed by our elders in recognition of our work, you know? And that's really, to me, you know, the kinds of teachers, that spiritual teachers and guides that I'm drawn to more, you know, those that are holding that, you know, sacred, ancient style of learning that's much more hands-on. You know, I think the you know, there's things that you can learn online for sure, but there's no replacing that, you know, so much of the magical work that we do and the energy work. You know, it's human-to-human connection, you know, and coming down and, you know, being together on the land and all those kind of things. So, you know, a computer can't really take the place of that entirely, you know, and there's so many, like, pop-up kind of programs out there, so... Yeah, so it was wonderful to have that, you know, that validation and that honor just from the elders saying, you know, we recognize what you're doing and we support what you're doing, because it's very important to me, no matter how long I've been doing my work or how long I've been teaching or, you know, how long I will be teaching or however many years, that I'm always respectful of the elders, you know, and that as the elders are speaking, it's important to listen, you know, and sometimes we don't want to listen, you know, sometimes the messages can be hard, but oftentimes the messages that are the hardest and those that we want to hear the least are the ones that are the most important.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And that's what, you know, I mean, that's what Sisters of Hanua is set up for, to listen to the elders, to get their messages so that we can all grow and learn and be supported by them and guided by them, because they're the ones who walk before us. They're the ones who are really initiating us into this new energy and this new time.
Absolutely.
So how does,
I love that.
What does Sisters of Hanua mean to you in particular, being a part of this?
Well, I just absolutely, first of all, adore, you know, the work that Maria does and the work that Linda does. And I remember being part of the early, you know, visionary conception of Sisters of Hanua before it even, I think, had a name. Because, you know, working with Maria is just such a delight because she's so, she channels so much huge, huge, huge information, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting an email about, you know, I think it's the logo now for Sisters Hanua, where there's this beautiful turtle and with the moon, and she was having prophecies of the image, and she sent out an email saying, you know, to a group of folks, you know, if this resonates with you, let me know, because something is coming through. And, you know, this was several years ago. And shortly thereafter, you know, there were the pilgrimages and the gathering of the grandmothers and Sisters of Hanua, and going to the sacred sites of the earth and connecting with the people of the lands of the sacred sites. And it's now turned into this amazing, just actually mind-blowing network of some of the most incredible healers and teachers and medicine men and women and, you know, prophecy speakers really on this planet right now. So I just feel that, you know, it's such an important thing. I really try to let as many people know about it as possible, because it's a project. It's something that's given of the soul. It's really needed at this time. So I love how the elders are appearing and Maria's connecting everybody, and it's just continuing to grow. You know, every time I turn around, it seems like there's another grandmother or elder that's appearing, you know, so we have this mm-hmm. huge family of support. And even those of us that haven't met each other, you know, I'll hear from folks, and, you know, I know parts of their story and they know parts of my story. And then, you know, we know that the time for us to meet is coming, and the prophecies and the wisdom that's being shared is happening in the meantime. And, you know, it's part of it is unknown, and that's what's wonderful too. You know, a lot of it's known, some of it's unknown. It's just this wonderful mixture of spirit and humans and devotion and, you know, recognition that this is an important time for us to all gather and be in community, you know, put down our differences and come to the altar and speak together and find out how we can keep our hearts open, you know, stay in the compassion and be peacekeepers at this time.
Definitely. Definitely. And well, I'm wondering, what teacher had the most profound impact on your teaching and spiritual path?
Well, I would say I've had many, many wonderful teachers. I feel very blessed. But the woman that comes to mind is Louisa Teach, and she is actually of the West African Nigerian diaspora, and is an elder and a longtime teacher, and is somebody who appeared early on in my journey. And I actually first met her through her voice when her book Jambalaya was recommended, which is a book of sacred charms on and spells on the African tradition. And I was lucky enough to get the audio tape, and her voice, she's a master storyteller. I mean, she's just phenomenal. And her voice is so, it's just like, you know, it's just like honey pouring. You know, it's just silky, smooth, beautiful. You could hear it forever. And she told her book and her story, and I said, I have to meet this woman. And, you know, I got in touch with her, and I've been studying with her ever since, and we're actually working on a book together about sacred sites pilgrimage etiquette, and it's called On Holy Ground, and we've been working on that for a couple of years, and we're looking forward to it being out sometime around June. So, you know, she's a mentor, she's a friend, she's a wonderful woman, and, you know, someone that I can go to help guide me, and, you know, and can give support, because it's important to have support when we're doing this work, because we're, you know, those of us that are taking on this mantle of, you know, spiritual leader, you know, if you're really doing the work, you know, the people are coming to you, and it's just this huge energetic to hold. It's a big responsibility. So it's wonderful to have those, you know, colleagues and elders and mentors there to support all of us. So praise and thanks to Teach. Yeah, she goes by Teach, her last name.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get her on the show soon.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Because
she is one of the grandmothers.
Yeah, she is one of the grandmothers of Sisters of Hanua. So she's a part of our extended network here, and she's, you know, from what I hear, really amazing, and I can't wait to interview her. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, you'll have a good time. She's a lot of fun too, and we are part of the pilgrimage that's coming up through Sisters of Hanua to Egypt in October. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh yeah, that's right. There's a pilgrimage to Egypt through Sisters of Hanua. It's being led by Hilary Ramo, and it's coming up in October, and I think you'll find it at sistersofhanua.org. I believe it's already up there, and it's going to be a pretty amazing, amazing trip to Egypt, to people that know Egypt very well, plus the elders and Leilani, obviously, and Loisa, and you know, you're definitely going to get more than you bargained for.
No doubt about that.
You know, yeah, there's, you know, the pilgrim is leaving at the beginning of April here to Hawaii coming up, and that also involves Pueblo and Mayan elders, and it's going to be amazing.
There's so many beautiful things happening.
Yeah. And but how do you teach others about goddess spirituality?
I have a women's temple, Daughters of the Goddess, and I call it a temple because we don't have an official site, but the women are the temple, and you know, we find various wonderful spaces in the area that we circle with, and we meet once or twice a month, and you know, there's instruction. Also given through a witch school year-in-a-day training program that I do, and we break down a lot of what we do in our ceremonies, altar building, invoking the directions, you know, just a lot of the different energetics of creating ceremony. And so the you know, there's the school, but the circle and the community is also a teaching circle. So there's, you know, priestesses in training. You know, it's very participatory. So I try to involve the women and girls that come here as much as they want to be involved. So if people are hungry to learn, I make space for it, no doubt about it. So, and then I also teach I'm on the faculty at the Women's Spirituality Master's Program at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto. So I've been teaching through that program as well. And that's a wonderful, you know, venue for folks that are looking for more of an academic setting and studying the goddess and doing thesis work and all those kinds of, you know, those kind of wonderful things. And then I travel, you know, I'm invited to different places, you know, workshops. I've been, you know, all over the place in Canada and, you know, all over the United States. And so pretty much wherever there is a space that opens up for me to teach and share, you know, I'm there, you know, I'm there and happy to be there. You know, I've lectured in colleges and various places. So just, you know, the possibilities just continue to manifest and evolve.
That's great. And
yeah.
Excuse me. I've been able to see you dance, and I don't know if you remember this, but I was at the Hummingbird retreat in Santa Barbara, and you were there with Marie and Linda, and you danced for us. It's beautiful, Hula, and you know, you certainly embody what you teach, and it's an incredible gift that you share. And but I was wondering, what, you know, how does dance, how significant is that, do you feel, in women's spirituality?
Well, I think it's a really important piece because you know, there's so many things that we can teach with words and talking, and, you know, that's certainly important. But there's something about going back to movement as prayer, because it's not just dance as far as, you know, performing and dance as a form of entertainment, but going back to this place of dance being prayer through movement. And I feel like, you know, both for someone who is embodying it and moving themselves, as well as for those that share our dance with others, there's a communication that happens that's really hard, if not impossible, to replicate in just a verbal discussion. You know, there's just something that gets transmitted through the invocation of movement and then the sharing of what comes through in the dance. And I think hula in particular is a form, you know, a sacred dance that has that kind of communication power. And, you know, I know people that love hula, and, you know, you don't even understand the word sometimes in Hawaiian, but they get it. But, you know, certainly there's many, many cultures, if we really dug deep, and, you know, some cultures you don't really even have to dig deep, where there is a form of sacred dance in almost every culture. And I think it's really important to bring that form back in some way, you know. You know, and it doesn't mean you have to be a professional dancer, or, you know, but just somehow getting yourself to move and open your body, and, you know, I think the fluid movements of the hips and, you know, these places that we often have locked energy, and just allowing our spine to open up, and, you know, our arms and hands to connect with, you know, the things around us. Because a lot of times when we're dancing hula, it's a reenactment of nature and the way the ocean moves and the way the trees are interacting with the wind blowing, you know, so you can really feel that in your body if you allow yourself to open to that place. So I find it very important, very, very important.
Do you teach
hula? Hopefully we'll get a chance to dance together. I will share when I'm on the road, I will share hula in various workshops, but when I, sometimes in smaller groupings, but I myself, you know, have a teacher that I work with, and I, so, you know, it's one of those things that you always are a student. I feel like I'm always going to be a student of hula and learning and, you know, working with that kind of energy. So it's something that I share, but not on as broad of a scale as some of the other people who have specifically dedicated their lives to the teaching, you know, of the hula, the kumu hula, or our hula masters that are specifically focused on that's their, you know, entire, you know, realm of what they're focusing on. So praise and thanks to them too.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's amazing that I think it's one of the few traditions that have, you know, sort of survived the Western takeover. Very, you know, I mean, it seems as though the line has been unbroken, you know, that it is passed down in its purity, in its pure form.
It has. It's a miracle because it was illegal at one time, you know, as so many things have been in the native cultures. But, you know, I feel like, you know, if spirit wants something to be here, no matter what anyone does to try to keep spirit down, spirit's going to keep rising, you know?
I agree.
Yep. It's a wonderful thing.
So how do you think, we kind of discussed this a little bit, but I wanted to go a little bit deeper, how connecting with the goddess, you talked a little bit about how it helps women, but how do you think it would help men? Like, if a man were to come to you and ask you, you know, why should I care?
Yeah.
What does the goddess have to do with me? I'm a guy.
Yeah.
So
what
would you tell them if they were an open-minded person?
Yeah, I like that. If they're open-minded, and hey, maybe even if they're not open-minded, you know?
Right.
There's always a chance for a mind to be opened spontaneously.
Right.
I'd say, you know, for men, I think it's really, really important because, you know, there's a balance, and there is a reservoir and a well of spiritual energy that is also available for men and for our brothers, you know, because our men are our brothers, our fathers, you know. So, I mean, definitely the brotherhood is absolutely in need of healing. You know, I mean, there's no doubt about it. They need healing. So I think for men to be open to come to the altar of the goddess and to receive the messages, you know, in whatever way that comes through, and, you know, to balance it out, you know, like if they still feel like they want to, you know, do whatever, you know, they've been doing, it doesn't mean they have to give anything up, but to be open, you know, to allow whatever this energy is to come through. And also a lot of the goddess energy, actually, just by the nature of associating with women, you know, which all men associate with women, that they are standing in the face of the goddess, or they are standing at the altar of the goddess, and, you know, they are feeling that energy. You know, so much of the energy that many men receive from women is absolutely the energy of the goddess, you know. So I think, you know, to give name to that, to just own it and to open to that. And I think there's an opportunity for a lot of profound, you know, healing and for men to live more in their passion and to live to their full potential, you know, beyond what the traditional roles that they're handed down as well, because that definitely has been, you know, something that has not necessarily been beneficial to, you know, to our brothers as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're doing a retreat. You are going to Hawaii at the end of April. You're doing a retreat.
Yes, I'm doing a retreat. It's actually, at this point, we're rolling over to the next retreat that I'll be doing to Hawaii, which I don't have dates for yet. But, you know, this one I've had the honor of taking some of the women that have studied with me for, you know, quite a few years, and this Hawaii pilgrimage has been on the calendar, or something that has been desired by many, and it just feels like now is the right time, and I'm taking women back to learn more about, you know, Hawaii from, you know, from a local person's perspective, because I think that, you know, of course, no matter, even if you go there and stay in the tourist zone, the island is so beautiful that you will receive the gifts of what she has to offer. But I think that going there with someone, you know, that has, you know, kind of like the inside track is really good. So, yeah, so we're going there at the end of April, the beginning of May. We'll be there for May Day, for the May Day festivities that happen with all the beautiful flower lays. And, you know, there's master flower lay makers and hula, and we'll be working in the taro patches and, you know, making space to give back to the land, and going to visit our last reigning Hawaiian monarch, Queen Liliuokalani's palace, and, you know, hear more about her story, you know, some of the beautiful things, some of the heartbreaking things. So it's just going to be a real good taste of, you know, reconnection. So I'm really looking forward to that. But don't despair. There'll be another Hawaii trip, even though this one's full. So hopefully
I'm not despair.
Will still. Yeah. There's always something coming. Oh, there's always another good thing coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful.
It's really amazing. Actually, last year, I took a group to, there's a temple dedicated to the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet, believe it or not, right outside Las Vegas, about a half an hour. And I took a group of women there out to the desert, and that was really magical, and we'll probably go back there, you know, spring of 2011. So, you know, there's all sorts of good things between Egypt and Sekhmet and Hawaii, and, you know, Tisha and I are talking in our book about all the different places we want to take people, and she was talking about, you know, the Voodoo Festival in New Orleans, and, you know, so there's a lot of good things coming up.
Oh, that's really exciting. You will keep us posted to all that.
Definitely. Definitely, absolutely. I look forward to that.
And we definitely want to hear about the book coming out, since we have pilgrimages, and I think it's a wonderful education to have people know protocols on pilgrimages and know protocols for sacred spaces, and, you know, to have that understanding before they go on pilgrimage is a really good benefit.
Yeah, it feels
everyone.
Really important. Yeah, we want to take folks out of the so-called, like, tourist mindset, you know, the tourist zone, and move it into, you know, traveling to places as as a prayer, you know, as an offering of devotion, and, you know, respecting the places that way, as if you went to, you know, someone's home that you really care about and the way you would treat it, you know. So there's all kinds of, you know, fun stories between Tish and myself and, you know, people doing crazy things like, you know, I think Tish was on a tour in Egypt in the past and noticed someone putting their cigarette out on the pyramid.
Oh my.
You know, so, yeah. You know, and certainly those kind of things might have their own karmic implications on their own, you know, but why not have an opportunity to warn people about this kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so you know, some of it will be, you know, I'm really looking forward to the book coming out, and I'll definitely keep you posted and, you know, keep you all informed.
Great, and we'll let all our listeners know that, you know, about what the goings on with you. And you can also sign up for the newsletter at the Sisters of Panua website and get all that information. And, you know, we're still building our network here. We're still helping people get connected in a consistent and one-stop shopping kind of way. So, but everybody who signs up for our newsletter can support that and keep us moving forward. So
wonderful. It's a wonderful newsletter. I love when I get it.
Yeah. And is there anything else? Like, do you offer private services? What do you do aside from ceremony? What do you offer in your practice?
Do private sessions with folks that are wanting to have, you know, more one-to-one work. And so I do readings. I do hands-on healings. You know, I officiate wedding ceremonies, you know, just all kinds of different things, pretty much anything people are needing. But definitely, if people are interested in one-to-one work, you know, whether it be in person, I also do, you know, sessions over the phone for those folks that are outside of the Bay Area, and that's been, you know, something that works well. And, you know, I love the opportunity to do that. You know, we do ancestor journeying and, you know, healing of old, you know, just whatever needs to leave and isn't serving us anymore and bringing in the new. And, you know, sometimes it's helpful to have a little bit of insight, you know, on what direction we're taking. And it's good to have some perspective on that. So I really appreciate having the honor of doing those one-to-one workings with folks.
And your website is daughtersofthegoddess.com, correct?
That's correct. Daughtersofthegoddess.com.
You can always find Leilani there and get some wonderful, wonderful experiences in working with Leilani. And you have a very large community that you work with in San Francisco.
Yeah, I feel pretty thankful that, you know, I mean, I feel like there's a you know, I started this 13 years ago, and I actually said, you know, as long as women decide to attend, I'll keep doing it, and they've never stopped coming, and it's continued to grow, and I have a lot of support within the community of wonderful, talented women that are willing to offer their services and you know, volunteer and help, you know, do a lot of the different kind of behind the scenes that are needed. So I absolutely, you know, would not be where I am if it weren't for all of the amazing women that contribute their time and energy and aloha and love to, you know, to helping, you know, this grow and helping get, you know, the word of the goddess out there to folks.
And we have a community down here. We hold a monthly Moon Lodge gathering. And we have started to offer up messages from the grandmothers or sisters. You're not officially a grandmother yet. Still a spring chicken.
No, definitely
there.
Not.
So you're a sister.
I better not be because my daughters are 19 and 17. So I'm not.
Oh, no.
I'm not allowed to be a grandma yet. I tell them, they have to wait.
Good. That's good advice.
Yeah.
But what would you offer up women who, you know, who are kind, you know, sort of your same age group, you know, mothers and or mothers of young children? What, you know, we're looking to bring messages from the Sisters of Panua to our communities and in Moon Lodge and Sacred Space. So So what would you offer as a message to those women?
I would say, you know, no matter how busy life is, because life is busy and it is full, no doubt about it, especially if you're the mother of young children, make space and time for yourself, you know, to connect with spirit, you know, to pray, to do whatever it is that makes you feel centered, and to nourish ourselves, you know, because when we, you know, we are the givers of so much. And if we're not drinking from the well first, then it's hard for us to really give the kind of sustenance we need to give to everyone, you know, both emotionally, psychically, physically, all those things. So I would say, you know, don't make up excuses, you know, no matter how busy things are, we're never too busy to make space for the time that we need to nurture our spirit and our soul.
And what do you do to nurture your spirit and soul?
Well, I get a lot out of, you know, the ceremonies that I'm in, being at the altar and praying. That really, really, really nurtures me. You know, it's wonderful when you're in a position where the things that you share and teach also feed. You know, so I get as much from being around the women that come to learn as, you know, hopefully they do from what I'm sharing. So I feel like that's a big thing. But, of course, you know, I love things like body work and getting massages and all those kind of good things. But don't we all? You know, that kind of goes with the whole thing. So I haven't met a woman yet that doesn't like getting massaged. But, you know, and then time in nature, you know, taking time to get outside and, you know, hike or, you know, connect with the land and, you know, not trying to leave ourselves too much in the indoors confines of, you know, everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what we also talked about this, I feel like I'm being a little redundant here, but can you tell me, let's look at Hawaii and why it's so important to our spirituality at this time. I mean, why is Hawaii important to humanity right now?
Oh, that's such a great question, because there's such a deep and profound message, you know, because we call it the spirit of Aloha, and people will say, well, what is the spirit of Aloha, you know, and it's one of those things that doesn't really completely translate into the English language, but it is about this deep and profound connection between humans and nature and community and, you know, creating sisterhood and brotherhood. And in Hawaiian culture, we have this term which we call, you know, pono, to make things right, to make things balanced. And then we have ho'oponopono, which is to put that into action. And that's often a word used to describe a certain communication resolution style of having ho'oponopono, is that, you know, no matter what differences we have, you know, no matter what it is that we've gone through, that we try to come together and work together, you know, that we put our differences aside and we find a way, we find a point of peace, we find a point of peace and compassion so that we can come together and find the love in our hearts for each other, you know, and it sounds so simple, but it's so hard, you know, it's so hard to put down the divisiveness or the separateness or, you know, even wanting to be autonomous and the individual, you know. So I think Hawaii's message is so much about, you know, how can the needs of the whole be met while still including the needs of the individual and having this expansiveness of thought, so it doesn't have to be me or you or I or them or whatever, but, you know, we put it all together, and I'm just, you know, like my hands are moving as I'm talking, you can't really see, but just like I'm moving it in a circle, you know, like moving it together so we're all flowing together, we're flowing together and we're working together, you know, so this the sense of true cooperation, you know, cooperation from the heart, and not just when the times are good, but when the times get tricky and the times get hard, that we come to this place of pono or ho'oponopono and balance and, you know, do right action for the highest good of all involved.
Well, it was also, isn't Hawaii also the land of Lemuria, right? I mean, it's considered to be where Lemuria was.
Definitely. Yeah, there are folks that feel connected to the old, you know, the lands under the sea and the old ways, and the old ways are coming back into the new ways, you know? So there's definitely that connection. It sounds like you studied that a little bit.
No, I just listened to Maria.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of legends about the old lands under the sea, and that the new information is still coming through, you know. So there's a lot of big information to be found, you know, and it's, you know, just the energy of living on a land that has a vibrant, you know, volcano flowing beneath it. You know, the lava herself has her own healing, transformative properties.
Yeah, and that's what the elders know. I mean, really, what the elders know, the histories and the legends and the energy and what the impact it has on us. And so we can't, you know, we talk about elders' wisdom. It's not just, you know, bits of advice, but, you know, true knowledge, true understanding of where the earth has been and where it's going.
Absolutely. That's so true. We're so lucky to have this configuration of elders coming together, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It's wonderful. All the things that are going on, there's so many opportunities through your programs and through Sisters of Hanua and, you know, all the elders doing everything also on their own. So I wonder what, we have about 9 minutes left.
Okay.
And so I'd wonder what you'd like to say, or what, if there are any other questions. First, I'm going to ask the chat. There's some people in the chat. There's lots of good activity going on there. But I'm wondering if anyone on the chat wants to ask another question of you before we end. So wait to see if something comes up there. And also, would like to know, what do you think determines a sacred space? What creates a sacred space for you? I mean, let me say that differently. How do you know what is a PowerPoint on Earth? You know, how do you know it's a sacred land? And
what's different? Well, you know, certainly there's, you know, the most known places, you know, places in Egypt and Hawaii and, you know, Sedona and various places. And I also feel that, you know, our actual land we live on can be considered a sacred space, you know? So I think sacred space is definitely defined certainly by the legacy of, you know, generations of culture that have recognized certain power places on the earth, and that we continue to be the caretakers and the guardians of that. I also think that sacred space is created by the intention that we hold within ourselves of all those places that we come to and want to, you know, hold in that way, you know? Because I think that, you know, of course I love the, you know, people getting to take sacred sites pilgrimages, and that's such an important thing. But it's also important for people to know that, you know, even in your own home, you know, you can have, you know, an altar, you know, in the garden, your own garden or whatever. So it doesn't have to be something that we travel outward somewhere else and go off and do other things. You know, that's a wonderful experience. But in the meantime, you know, we don't have to wait for that, you know. And I think the more that we cultivate feeling the energy of sacred space around us in our everyday life, through our own personal practices in whatever form that looks, whether it's, you know, having an altar, whether it's, you know, collecting a flower every day from our garden, you know, or a branch or a leaf or whatever simple thing. Oftentimes the simplest things can be so profound and precious and sacred, you know. So intention definitely has a lot to do with it, you know. And there's folks who I know, including myself, where if I'm cooking a meal for my family, you know, the intention I hold when I enter that space can really make a big difference, you know, if I'm thinking of it as, oh, this is just a tour, or if I'm thinking, you know, putting myself into more of a meditative prayer-like space. And I know sometimes it's, you know, it's hard to do every day, but that we don't mm-hmm. go for too long without forgetting that sense of, you know, taking time to appreciate, you know, to just appreciate, you know, the life that we've been given and all the acts that we walk through. There's such wonderful, you know, glorious moments in the most everyday kind of thing.
Thank you. And Jennifer asked a question on the chat. What does it mean to create, or how do you create sacred space? And you just said it. So
yeah.
Your question, Jennifer.
You know, exactly. It could be just going and getting a branch or leaf and, you know, lighting a candle. And I should probably add, you know, whenever I always encourage folks, you know, in Hawaii culture, that when we have offerings for nature, that we ask permission of the plants or the branches or whatever, and that we check in, you know, before we just pick a flower, and that we have that kind of communication. And so even that becomes a prayer, you know, even the, you know, the openness to receive an offering for one's altar or whatever, that becomes a sacred, you know, an intention of sacred space creation.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Melinda's interested in the trip to Egypt in October.
Yay! Okay.
Yay. So she wants to know what it'll be about and where you'll go.
Well, we'll go. We'll be there for a week. You know, it's going to be touring various sacred the temples, the pyramids. There's actually a full itinerary on the Sisters of Planua site where she can get more information. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, as I said, of course, it'll be touring, but it'll also be including, you know, ceremony and song and chant and dance and, you know, community building and all of those kind of things. So I'd encourage her to go and take a look at all of the in-depth information that's available on the site, which is really wonderful.
And that's sistersofhanua.org. Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. And what would you like to end with? What message would you like to leave with?
Let's see. Maybe I'll do a bit of a Hawaiian chant. How would that sound?
It's wonderful.
Okay. I'm going to do a chant that's to the goddess Laka, and it's just all about the things that we've been talking about with nature. So, no ho anakea koi kana hele hele yala ye eke ki ohu ohu. E kaua koko, o nā kinu malui kalani malu e hoi, e houlu mai ana o laka I kona kahu, o mā konoa, aloha e ie. And mahalo for listening. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And again, we've been talking to Leilani Byerly, and you can find out more about her, learn from her, find out what she's up to, send her emails, become her best friend. You'll find that she's on sistersofhanua.org, but her own website is daughtersofthegoddess.com. So thank you again so much for being here.
Thank you.
Awesome, wonderful, wonderful show. Thank you. So I want to say that next month on April 9th, 11 a.m. Pacific time, we do the show every second Friday of the month at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Our guest will be renowned spiritual teacher, clairvoyant healer, and life coach, Rafael Tamora. We have some very special shows coming up, so be sure to listen in. And if you're one of those who lose track of time, subscribe and it'll be automatically downloaded to your audio programming. If you have questions or guests for our guests or upcoming guests, contact me at janetlightstone@yahoo.com. And if you like this show today, favorite it and pass the word about what we are doing here. We're growing peace, sharing the wise words of women, and sharing the wise words of women. Our website is sistersofhanua.org. Thank you again, Leilani. It was a blast.
Thank you, Janet. Aloha, mahalo.
Aloha, mahalo to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.